Good morning, brethren. Trying to see how I advance the slides. Can somebody help me with that? Appreciate everyone being there, being here this morning. We will be speaking. Well, I got one just like it up here. I just didn't know what I was looking at. Big green button. Okay, thank you. I should have coordinated that ahead of time. Sorry about that. What I'd like to do this morning is speak a little bit about the eldership. Normally, when we speak about the eldership, we're about to select new elders, and that's not necessarily the case this morning. But I thought I would try to speak to you a little bit about what we as elders do and a little bit about our roles and responsibilities, and then also what I would like to do is try to, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of the qualifications, but I'm really not even going to go over the qualifications much this morning. I just want to do a little bit of an overview of our work so that you as members here can kind of understand our perspective on things and what it is that we do for you. I also would like to spend a little bit of time as we go through some of the material this morning, talk about preparation to qualify to serve. There are a number of men here that I think are well on their way to serving this congregation or maybe some other congregation if they're not here at the time as elders. And I would even encourage our young folks here, it's not too early to start preparing. And we've had a number of recent baptisms, and sometimes you think you're way too young to be worried about being an elder, but this is when you start, and we need for you guys to be preparing, and you young ladies to be preparing yourself to be a wife of an elder. And then I also, again, want to emphasize this idea of preparation to serve. What I'm going to do this morning, it's going to be a little different than the way we normally approach a topic on the eldership. I'm going to look at two passages this morning. We'll talk about several other passages to kind of emphasize the point. But these two passages use three words to describe elders. And I believe each of those words show us a unique aspect as far as what the responsibilities of elders are. And of course, the first one's just elders. We'll talk about that. Normally, these days, you guys refer to us as elders, but there are a couple of other words here. Overseers is another word that we'll look at this morning. And then the third one is shepherd. Some of you may actually refer to us as shepherds, and you'll see why whenever we get into these passages. 1 Peter 5, verses 1 through 4, you can see these three words highlighted there. The elders who are among you, I exhort. This is Peter writing here. I, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd, this is a verb actually here, verb form. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers. Not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. He compares the work here, particularly as shepherds, to what the chief shepherd has done to us. And we'll spend a little bit of time this morning talking about that. But I want to look at Acts chapter 20, and Acts chapter 20, verse 16 through 21, this is the occasion where Paul is on his way back to Jerusalem. He's in a hurry to get there. He's trying to get there before the Passover. And on his way, he really wants to stop off and speak to the elders at Ephesus. But he doesn't want to spend any time in Ephesus. He's afraid if he goes to the city, he'll get bogged down and won't make it to Jerusalem in time. So he stops off at this port city called Miletus, which is very close to Ephesus there. And from Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church. Therefore, and I'll drop down, we'll skip a few verses there, verse 28, therefore take heed to yourselves and all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd, again, this is verb form, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood. So we'll spend just a few minutes talking about three words this morning. The first word, elder, is presbyteros. I'm probably not pronouncing that quite right, but that's the Greek word that we find for elders in these two passages. And of course, it's where we get the word presbyter. And of course, that in other religions has a completely different meaning. And one of the things you need to know is these three words, all three of these words are talking about the same group of men. And some religious groups today, they'll try to distinguish these as three different groups. And the presbyter, it really just means old. You think about elder, an elder is an old person. And it's an older person. Well, what does that mean? It's interesting in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 6. This is the qualifications for elders here. And what you'll note there in verse 6 is that this man is not to be a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall in the same condemnation as the devil. But it's not someone that's necessarily just old by age. It's someone who is not a novice. It's someone who has some spiritual maturity to him. What I want to show you, too, is obviously in the Old Testament, it's a Hebrew word, not a Greek word. But we're familiar with passage after passage after passage that talks about the elders, right? And a lot of those are the elders of Israel. Eddie led us in thoughts this morning as far as the Lord's Supper around the time that the children of Israel are in bondage. First passage we'll look at is Exodus 3, verse 16. This is actually at the burning bush. And God is instructing Moses to go back and talk to Pharaoh. But he says, in verse 16, he says, go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob appeared to me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen what is done to you in Egypt. So instead of gathering all of the children of Israel together, God tells Moses to gather the elders together. And what we'll see as we go along here is that the elders are the spiritual leaders of the families there. Eddie mentioned the Passover. When it's time for them to start preparing the Passover, getting the instructions about what they're supposed to do, chapter 12, verse 21 says, then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourselves according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. So again, the instructions oftentimes went to the elders. And we see those as the spiritual leaders. They're the ones that are going to communicate to the families there. And we'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. And chapter 17, verse 5, they have left Egypt, and they are out in the wilderness, and they become thirsty. And they're complaining there. Moses there in chapter 17 of Exodus, verse 5, and the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river. Behold, I stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and the water will come forth out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so. So you see the involvement of the elders there in providing leadership for the people. And these are the children of Israel. And one other passage we'll look at very quickly, just to emphasize the point that these are supposed to be the religious leaders of the day, is Judges chapter 2 and verse 7. At this point, Joshua has just passed away. And it says there in Judges chapter 2, verse 7, so the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So these are the ones that are instructing the people about God's will. They're the ones that are trying to keep their families pointed in the right direction. So here you have elders of over the entire nation. In Numbers chapter 11, you remember Moses really becomes discouraged. He's having to deal with every little petty thing that's going on there with the children of Israel. And it's a huge number of people that he's having to deal with here. So in Numbers chapter 11, verse 16, God tells him to appoint 70 of the elders. Gather the elders up, pick 70 of them, and they're going to help you with this burden of trying to judge the people. In Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 11 and 12, this is where the cities of refuge have been set up. And it's interesting there again, you know, there are different guidelines depending on whether the person that committed the crime was guilty or not. And it's interesting that the ones that are guilty, that had a hatred of the person that they killed ahead of time, those kinds of things, it's the elder's responsibility to go gather that person and deliver him to the avenger. And so you see there are elders even over particular cities there. And so anyway, you kind of get the idea here. You remember also in Ruth, Boaz, when he is going to try to claim Ruth for his wife, one of the things he does is he goes to the elders of the city there in Ruth chapter 4. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, this is the occasion where David has committed adultery with Bathsheba. And you remember in this passage, Nathan has come to David to tell him this story about a man who owned only one sheep. He was very poor, and a rich man who took that sheep and offered it when he had company coming over. And David became furious, and Nathan tells him that you are the man. You remember David is, he expresses his guilt there, and he begins to pray. He begins to fast for this child that is going to die as a result of his sin. And it's interesting, it says there in verse 17, so the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him up from the ground, but he would not, nor did he eat food with them. So these are men that have influence. They have certain level of maturity. It's people the people of their family, their city, or their country, maybe their tribe, I guess, in the case of the children of Israel, warrant this position of authority there. So elder is really just an older person. He's a mature person. He's not just old by age, but he's someone that has some level of spiritual maturity. It's interesting when we get over to the New Testament that the elders are mentioned there also on several occasions. This is just one. Matthew chapter 16, verse 21, Jesus begins to tell his disciples about what is going to happen to him when he gets to Jerusalem. And what he says is that he's going to be tried and put to death by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes. So the elders of the Jewish people, even during New Testament times, would have been understood as being the religious leaders. So when Paul uses this word elders, it probably had a little more resonating meaning, I guess, to the early church there, because this was a word that was commonly used for those in authority, those that should have good judgment. Obviously, those in Matthew 16, 21 did not. All right, the second word here is overseers. Overseers is episcopos. This is also where we get the word bishop. Again, other religious groups. Presbyters are the priests. The bishops are over the presbyters. The priests are over the common people. And that's not the case. All of these are the same group of men here. But it basically just means an officer who is in charge. And again, it's very, very common to understand this. A lot of times we make more out of it than we probably need to. In Genesis chapter 39, verses 4 and 5, you'll remember there that Joseph is in, he has been sold as a slave there in Egypt. And he is going to do well for Potiphar. And as a result of that, Potiphar makes him the overseer of his house. And it even goes on to say it became, God blessed him so much that that he put basically everything under Joseph's authority. He didn't even know what he had other than what he had to eat. And of course, there is a qualification that goes along with that as well. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 and 5. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? So it's someone who is put in authority to oversee, in this case, a household. Joseph was put over Potiphar's household. In Nehemiah, it's interesting, they're talking about different cities there. Nehemiah was one of the great leaders, I guess, in Old Testament history. When we get to Nehemiah chapter 11, it talks about these overseers that are put in charge of the city there, the city of Jerusalem. And there are different aspects that they're put in charge of there. 11 verse 1, now the leaders of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people cast lots to bring 1 out of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9/10 were to dwell in other cities. And so what you see here as you go along, verse 9, Joel the son of Zichri was their overseer, and Judah the son of Sanua was second over the city. When you get down to verse 14, and their brethren, mighty men of valor, were 128. Their overseer was Zabdiel, the son of one of the great men. Verse 22. Also, the overseer of the Levites at Jerusalem was Uzzah, the son of Bani, the son of Hashbani, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micah, of the sons of Asaph, the singers in charge of the service of the house of God. So these overseers are put in place to make sure that the things that need to be accomplished are accomplished. People are put to work, they're doing what they need to be doing, and that it's being done according to the pattern that is set out. And you can also see over a particular work. In 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 2, they're talking about getting ready to build the temple. Solomon has decided to build the temple. He's going to put certain overseers over that work. He's going to put overseers even over those that are gathering the tithes to pay for the work. When you get over to chapter 31, this is a case where Hezekiah is king, and he's putting some in charge of gathering tithes to repair the temple. And in chapter 34, they're actually supervising the restoration of the temple there. So really, this idea of overseer, it's not something that's very complicated to understand, but anytime there's a task to be done, it's very often that someone will be put in charge of overseeing that work. And it's to make sure that the work is done and that it's done according to the pattern that is laid out. So it's very simple to understand, I believe. And then we get to the third word here, and it's shepherd. Poimano is the word that we get pastor from. And again, oftentimes other religions will refer to the evangelist as the pastor. And yet what we see from this passage is that it's referring to elders there. It's also interesting that this word, the basic form of this word, basically just means to feed. And you remember that discussion in John chapter 21 where Jesus is having this discussion with Peter, and he keeps asking him, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Well, that second time he asks Peter, do you love me? And he says, yes, you know that I love you. He says, well, feed my sheep. Well, this word feed is the same word as shepherd here. And so we understand, I don't know that any of us in this room are shepherds, particularly of sheep. I had an interesting opportunity a few years ago. I was over in South Africa, and we were having a Bible study with a young man that owned some sheep. And he talked about hyenas coming out at night, and he had a dog that would alert him when the hyenas were around. The dog would start barking, and he would go out with his flashlight, and he could basically get between the hyenas and the sheep and shine that flashlight at the hyenas, and they would run away. I'm going to talk about him a little bit more here in a minute when we talk about shepherds. But the idea there is that we need to be feeding the sheep. In Genesis chapter 46 and verse 32 there, this is the occasion where Joseph's family has been brought down to Egypt. And he tells them that when you become before Pharaoh, you tell them that you are shepherds. Genesis chapter 46, verse 32. And look at how he explains what a shepherd is. I don't think Pharaoh had any misunderstanding of what a shepherd's job was. But in this passage, verse 32, it says, and the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock. And they have brought their flocks and herds and all that they have. And, of course, we understand that every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians, the end of verse 34. So they put them off into their own area, the land of Goshen. But it's this idea of the responsibility of the shepherd is to feed the sheep. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 15, this is the occasion where David has been selected by Saul. He has found favor with Saul, and he is there at Saul's court. But it tells us that on occasion, it says, but David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. That's the same idea of this idea of being a shepherd. In Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 15, we'll see that God had intended for shepherds to have certain responsibilities. And in Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 15, they had fallen away. Jeremiah, you remember, is the last message of God to the children of Israel, particularly the tribe of Judah, before they are taken into captivity. But he says in verse 15, "And I will give you shepherds according to my heart, who will feed you with knowledge and understanding." And this is going to be a time that comes about in the future when they return. And of course, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2 tells us that elders should be able to teach. That's one of the qualifications here. So feeding the sheep and teaching the sheep is part of our responsibility as shepherds. We're also supposed to know our sheep. One of the qualifications there in Titus 1:8 is hospitality. And I think that goes along with this idea of getting to know one another. We've set up small groups to try to facilitate that. And it's important that shepherds know the needs of their sheep. When Jesus is described as the good shepherd in John chapter 10, he will talk about knowing his sheep there. First five verses. "Most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up another way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." So it's important for eldership to know those that are part of their flock. This idea also of leading the sheep, Jesus talks there about leading them out of the sheepfold and taking them to good ground where they can feed and have water. In Jeremiah chapter 50, again, you know, this is God's plea with the nation of Israel before they're taken into captivity. And chapter 50, verse 6 through 7, it says, "My people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have led them astray. They have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from the mountain to hill, and they have forgotten their resting place. All who found them have devoured them, and their adversaries said, 'We have not offended because they have sinned against the Lord, the habitation of justice, the Lord, the hope of their fathers.'" So in this case, you see that the shepherds were not doing their job, and as a result of that, Judah is going to be taken into captivity. They had actually led them astray. You talk about caring for the sheep. You remember I mentioned when Nathan comes to David in 2 Samuel chapter 12, when he tells them this story, David becomes just incensed. And he says this rich man should die for what he's done. All he had done was taken a sheep. And you're thinking, does that warrant death? Well, to David it did. And it's because he knew what that sheep meant to that man. It said that he had raised that sheep, and the sheep was to him like a daughter. And of course, David could relate to that very closely. In Matthew chapter 18, verses 12 through 14, this is the parable that Jesus teaches about the 99 and the one. Matthew chapter 18, 12 through 14. We'll just read those few verses there. Won't read the entire parable. But it says, "What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountain to seek the one that is straying. And if he should find it, surely I say to you, he rejoices over that sheep more than the 99 that did not go astray. So it's this idea of caring for the sheep. And again, in John chapter 10, Jesus, the great shepherd, tells us what that means. He goes on to illustrate himself as the good shepherd. And you'll recall he tells his disciples there that he is willing to die for them. And he goes on to contrast the one who is a hireling. Let's pick up in verse 10 there. It says, I'm in the wrong chapter here. John chapter 10, and verse 10. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But he who is a hireling and not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And he goes on to say, and other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore my Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down. I have power to take it again. This command I received from my Father. You remember, I skipped this passage a minute ago, but when David is there, Goliath has come. All of the children of Israel, the armies of Israel, are afraid. The Philistines are there. They're giants. Their champion has come out and has challenged the armies of Israel to come and fight with them. And you remember David, when he is talking to Saul there, he said, when the lion and the bear came out, I killed them. And it's because of his love for the sheep. He was willing to put his life on the line for the sheep. I told you about the young man I had a discussion with over in South Africa. I asked him on that occasion, I said, now, if those hyenas don't stop, are you willing to lay your life down for your sheep? And guess what his answer was? No. His answer was no. He valued his life more than the sheep. But what you see with Jesus here, that's not the case. What you see with David is that it's not the case. They're willing to die for the sheep. And, of course, to protect the sheep. 1 Samuel 17, verses 34 through 36. I guess this is the passage I was just talking about with David and Goliath. He kills the lion and the bear to protect the sheep. Let's go back just for a minute to Titus chapter 1. This is the passage that talks about the qualifications of elders, one of the two. Titus chapter 1, in verses 9 through 11, it says, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict those who contradict. For there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. And we go back to the passage over in Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20, Paul warns the elders there in Ephesus about what is coming. And look at the language that he uses there. I think it ties in very closely with what we're talking about here. Acts chapter 20, verse 28 through 31. It says, "Therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood." There's two of these words we've been talking about. "For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears." Paul is very concerned about the brethren there in Ephesus, and he tells the elders there that they need to prepare themselves, the shepherds there, to prepare themselves to protect the sheep. All right, so we've talked about these three words: elders, overseers, shepherds. Elders being spiritual leaders, overseers just being someone that's put in charge to make sure that a plan is followed, that the work is done, it's completed, and the plan is followed. And then the shepherds carry this idea of the physical shepherds taking care of their sheep. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, and this goes again to maybe some of you that may think about serving as an elder in the future. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, the beginning of Paul's description of elders there, or bishops is the word that's used in New King James Version. It's the same word. "This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work." The passage that we started with in 1 Peter chapter 5, there's a number of things that are said there. We read them at the beginning of the lesson. But they need to serve willingly and eagerly there. It says, "Not by constraint, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly." And it also says there, this idea of dishonest gain. You remember back in the discussion that Paul had with those that would come in, the savage wolves that would come in Ephesus. He said that many of them are doing that for dishonest gain. So he says qualification of elder is not for dishonest gain. And this idea of being an overseer here in verse 3, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. A lot of the times, I guess we as shepherds, when we have discussions about this, it's important for us to lead. You know, I remember, you may remember the passage I talked about, Jesus in John chapter 10. It's this idea of leading. It's not this idea of driving the sheep. That's one of the things that's different maybe between a sheep and cattle, is you lead sheep, you drive cattle. But this idea of leadership, it's being an example to the flock. It's not beating people over the head and beating them into submission. And it says, "And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown that does not fade away." And of course, that's the ultimate prize that an elder could receive. What I want to do is turn our thoughts back to this chief shepherd as we close the lesson this morning. The chief shepherd, I think this passage probably gives us an idea of what the chief shepherd does for us. It's one that we're all familiar with. This is Psalm 23. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Our chief shepherd loves us very much. He not only was about to give his life, he did give his life for us. And it's important for us to understand that. I'm going to use that as an invitation this morning. Just remember how much the chief shepherd loves you. He's given his life for you, and the only way that you can have a proper relationship with him is through baptism, having your sins forgiven, and to continue to serve him as your shepherd and as your king. If there are any subject to the invitation this morning, I would invite you to come down to the front as we stand and sing.